Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Political observers in New York City are watching to see if Comptroller Scott Stringer runs against Mayor de Blasio in a Democratic primary next year. Adding fuel to that speculative fire is that Comptroller Stringer gave a speech this morning billed as his broad economic vision for the city. That's beyond the scope of what a controller usually does. Comptroller Stringer joins us now. Welcome back to WNYC.
Great to be on the show, Brian.
Not to bury the lead, are you considering running for mayor?
Well, I'll tell you what I did today. I laid out my economic vision for our city and how we can lift up every neighborhood, and we put forth a number of serious proposals. So not to bury the story, but the reality is that Abney has always been a place where elected officials come and share their vision for the city. This has been going on for decades, and I thought it was time, based on the audits I've done and the traveling I've been able to do as controller across all of our boroughs, I wanted to put a number of issues that I care about on the table: affordable housing, supporting minority and women-owned businesses, fighting poverty, and a real computer tech agenda for our public schools.
Well, Mayor de Blasio has been pursuing his broad economic vision for the city these last 3 years and emphasizing all of those same areas, I think. Is yours substantially different?
Well, I think, obviously, if one thing I think the mayor and I agree on is that we have to make sure that we lift up every New Yorker in every borough and every neighborhood in order to create a city that everyone can benefit from. And so what I've been able to do as controller is look at where the city is missing its mark in terms of moving this agenda forward. And what I try to do today is focus my remarks on a specific agenda with real timeline and real solutions to some of these problems. I started off talking about the millennials. You know, these are our children. And the fact is that we are not giving them the economic opportunities that they need. And as a result, this is the first generation that's going to be worse off than their parents. And we have to change that. We have to make sure that women and minority-owned businesses stop floundering in the city, even at a time of great recovery. And it's outrageous that many of these businesses can't compete for a city contract, can't be mentored so that they can be part of this $14 billion city spend, and I laid out a roadmap on how to do that. And obviously, affordable housing is one of the critical areas that we have to have a more urgent agenda and more tools in the toolbox.
Well, let's take affordable housing, since that's probably the number one topic that people call out on when we have the mayor on this show. If left to their own devices, open phones, call and talk to the mayor about anything, that's the number one issue over these months that we've been having them on a weekly basis. So where would you start in your agenda, since you just gave the speech this morning? I haven't seen it. Your housing agenda, how is it different from Mayor de Blasio's affordable housing program?
Well, again, I agree with the mayor and the city council's effort to change zoning requirements in the city. What I basically said, however, is that that's just not enough to get us to where we need to be. I did an analysis when I became controller, and we showed that from the year 2000 to 2012, the city lost 400,000 housing units that used to rent for $1,000 or less. So we need a broader, more proactive approach to building permanent, and here's the word, permanent low-income housing, not just housing for 10 or 20 years, but permanent housing. We did this in the 1930s with LaGuardia when he built public housing. The Mitchell-Lama housing program that I have worked on since I got my start as a housing activist, we need to do more. So we issued an audit. You remember this. We identified 1,100 vacant city-owned lots. 90% of these lots have been left vacant by the city for over 20 years, collecting garbage. Our city land is a precious resource. We own this land. It's time to put it to good use. So I propose the city create a land bank, which is a government-created entity with the power to acquire vacant and tax-delinquent property, couple it with a land trust which can hold on to property and convert it into permanent housing. And then I believe that we can leverage this land to build 57,000 units of permanent affordable housing. This is critical. And we need HBD to be more proactive. They should come to the table. And these lots belong to the people. We should give these lots back to the people and work with nonprofit community-based organizations. This strategy, I believe, will help get New Yorkers off the waiting list, off the streets, and out of our homeless shelters.
I thought that the vacant lots were a big opportunity in the 70s and 80s because, you know, the city was kind of down and out and there were a lot of vacant lots and landlords were giving up their buildings and the economic crisis of that time, mm-hmm. et cetera. Now, when every piece of real estate is so valuable, there just aren't a lot of vacant lots for the city to use for affordable housing. Is that not true?
Well, I don't agree with that. I mean, we've identified through our audits and investigations, we've identified 1,100 properties that could possibly be used to build affordable housing. And that is something we have to look at. 566 of these lots are in Brooklyn, and we need to begin to analyze where those lots can be used and how to use it. We have to build permanent housing, permanent low-income housing. You know, when I talked to Commissioner Banks, we both recognized that 30% of our homeless population actually are working in low-wage jobs. If they had an apartment or the ability to get an apartment, we could reduce the homeless population. But this population is now growing in record numbers. The purpose of my speech today was to put a marker down and say, let's be stronger, let's be more strategic, and let's build housing. And then, something I learned when I was Manhattan Borough President, you have to engage the community in a real way because people are afraid of gentrification and of being pushed out, and who can blame them? So City Hall has to actually partner with communities, not work against them. People legitimately look at a rezoning, and they say, you know, this affordable housing, it's unaffordable for the people in my community. So what are we doing here? Why can't we have a more strategic approach? Eric Schneiderman, the Attorney General, he's seeding land banks, Brian, all over the state, spending $33 million getting them up and running. But we don't have a land bank in New York City. So I said, let's have a land bank.
Are you accusing the de Blasio administration of working against communities, not with them?
I think they have missed the mark in how to engage communities to get the result that they need. And I think it comes with inexperience and a sense of, you know, a sort of a laissez-faire approach. And I want to see a more urgent, more steady, more strategic way to engage communities. Look, I did this when I was Manhattan Borough President, four major university expansions. They were controversial. It wasn't easy, but we work with the community. And look, it's a plan that I put forth today is pretty basic. Affordable housing, empower women and minority-owned businesses so we can have wealth creation in five boroughs, and then we need to expand the EITC. And we
Earned income tax credit.
Earned income tax credit. And finally, I talked about our children and how we have to give them the skills they need to compete in the high-tech economy. When the mayor talked about a computer science for all in a speech he gave, I think a year ago, it was a program to make everybody whole in 10 years. And I say, no, the urgency is now. We need to put technology training and work with our teachers just like Chicago and San Francisco are doing. We can't wait 10 years. 10 years, we'll lose another generation. We'll lose it for my kids. We'll lose it for the kids around the city who we don't even know. And I find that unacceptable. So I want a different kind of response.
My guest is New York City Comptroller Scott Stringer, who gave a speech this morning laying out a broad economic vision for New York City. Some people think he's testing the waters to possibly challenge Mayor de Blasio in a Democratic primary next year. Betty in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with Scott Stringer. Hello. Betty, you there?
Yes.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Yes, I wanted to know, I really appreciate Scott Stringer's work with, or his ideas about affordable housing, but it seems to me that the real estate developers and real estate, just in general, the people who are behind real estate in this city, are very, very powerful. And it seems like the government, the city government, doesn't seem to be able to control them very well. How is Scott Stringer going to do that?
Oh, Betty, I think that's an excellent question, and that's why the land bank is so critical. you can't just think that by working with for-profit developers, basically allowing them to build 40-story luxury housing developments in exchange for a smattering of temporary affordable housing, that is not the way we're going to build the next generation of affordable housing in the city. And that's why the land that the city owns, our land, has to be given back to the people. And by doing a land bank, you and working with not-for-profit organizations, you have an opportunity to retain control of the property for 99 years and build low-income housing that the city controls. We don't turn the land over to for-profit developers. There are times when that's appropriate, and there are times that, you know, given the new zoning laws, creating more affordable housing. But to really be a game changer, we have a precious resource, and that's our affordable housing.
You're saying
the land that we have that can build affordable housing.
You're saying, and a city controller, you think this is economically responsible, that the city could actually build a lot more government-owned housing in New York City?
Well, it's not the government owns the property. Then we lease it to community-based organizations who have real experience building permanent low-income housing. We believe in my office, we study this, that you can have low rents because we don't have a fiduciary obligation to pay back investors that some of the large developers need to do, so they can't always have low rents. And it's something that we should explore. And listen, this has happened before. Public housing was built in the 1930s. Mitchell-Lama housing was created after World War II. We haven't really had a game-changing housing opportunity in decades. The city has spent a lot of time making sure that the 421A program, the J51 program, was used to help developers. We've given tax breaks to companies that are threatening to flee the city. And yet we don't ever do anything to help the poorest people in the city leveraging our assets.
Cassius in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with Scott Stringer. Hi, Cassius.
Hey there, Brian. Thank you. Yeah, of course, it's really great to hear Mr. Singer
Stringer
bring up, you know, a lot more focused affordable housing policies. But the, you know, the other side of this development needs to be addressed. That somebody has to say no more to the luxury buildings and condo buildings. Like, somebody has to be willing to put their foot down, since Mayor de Blasio has failed to do that. Like, you have to stop issuing permits for luxury. We can't just have constant building in the city. It's, you know, I work as a cab driver. My garage is up in Long Island City in Queens, and it's completely unbelievable how much luxury building they're doing. Like, they're just destroying the entire neighborhood, and it just keeps growing and growing. Like, we have to have a sense of a density limit to the city. That's my
point. Cassius, thank you very much. Well, how much do you agree? And would you like to see the city crack down more and limit the amount of market rate development that's going on?
Oh, this is exactly what I hear people talk about no matter where I am, whether I'm in a church on Sunday or a community meeting in a basement in another part of the city. People are very concerned that luxury housing is gentrifying communities and pushing out the people who built our neighborhoods. So the answer is to go back to community-based planning, to come up with not a one-size-fits-all approach as it relates to zoning and housing, but rather working with communities to get it right. Look, there is going to be luxury housing, but it should not overwhelm communities. How about starting with the premise that we have a vulnerable population in our shelters, 57,000 people, half of them are children. Let's build permanent low-income housing for them. And then let's make sure we have housing that's aspirational. You start at the bottom. You're a new immigrant. You've been here. You have a job where you're struggling to make ends meet. But, man, once you get that affordable housing unit, it starts you on the ladder to success. We've lost that concept. What we do now is we build luxury housing and then a smattering of negotiated temporary affordable housing.
But let me jump in on that. I think the mayor would probably say something like, they're working on permanently affordable housing in this 20% to 30% ratio that they're trying to get the market rate developers to guarantee in their developments. That's been a big thing of the current administration too, is make those things permanent, not like the Mitchell-Lama apartments that expired. But in addition to that, the developers have a lot of power not to build. And so I think, I don't want to speak for the current administration, but I think they would probably say something like, they have to have enough incentive to build. And that's why it's the kind of 20% to 30% when you change the zoning in their favor. That's what you can leverage out of them. You can't get any more than they're already trying to get by driving harder bargains than the Bloomberg administration. What would you say?
I would say that's the old math, and it's not working. And you ask any community person, and they will tell you that we're losing valuable, affordable housing in all of our communities. So I want to change the paradigm. I want to change the model. We have 1,100 vacant units that the city owns. Put the land to work for the people. Engage community-based organizations. Build the kind of affordable housing we need. Sure, I'm not suggesting that we don't continue to fight and kick and scream and scratch for every affordable housing unit that a developer could give in exchange for zoning, but it's a narrow tool. It's not going to get us to where we have to be. We will get some temporary affordable housing. Most of this is not permanent housing, Brian. Some of it is, but most of it isn't. Even under the Bloomberg administration, an ambitious housing plan only netted a few thousand units of permanent low-income housing. So if we keep doing the same old thing, we're going to have the same old city, a city for the very rich with enclaves for the poor, nothing in between. And what I announced today is a progressive agenda that does a couple of things. It talks about building housing in a different way. It talks about investing in women and minority-owned businesses in a different way. We talk about how we're going to help the kids and we're going to lift people out of poverty. So let's get with it with specific proposals and stop kicking the can down the road. And I think this is something worth discussing. Now, not every one of my ideas is the way to go. And I do think the mayor has worthy proposals and he works on it. He believes it. But the people are telling me we are not doing enough. There's an urgency, and we have to begin to have a game-changing opportunity for our working people in the city. So,
one more call. Sophia in Broad Channel. You're on WNYC. Hi, Sophia.
Hi there. Hello, Mr. Stringer. I don't know if you remember me from a few meetings that I came to, Sandy oversight meetings that you were having, town hall meetings in the communities.
Wow, your voice rings familiar. Yes, hi.
Hi there. My question is, I'm not sure if you saw the article in the Wall Street Journal about houses costing $1 million to repair in the Build It Back program. One of my neighbors, who was quoted in the article, he was pictured with his son. Says that he bought his house a few years ago for about $365,000. But yet Tishman, or whoever it is, he's been quoted in the Build It Back program that it's going to cost $600,000 to raise his house. This is unfathomable to me for a number of reasons, and I'm just going to try to give you the quickest one. Because a few years ago, before Sandy, it would be about maybe $1,500 per foot that you went up when you raised your house, and then maybe about $60,000 to $80,000 if you were going to have a really, really nice foundation. So we're talking less than $100,000 to raise a house. How did it go from that to $600,000 to raise my neighbor and $1 million per house?
Yeah.
Why don't we just give people $500,000 apiece or $400,000 apiece, tell them to rebuild their houses and then be on their way and let them choose their own contractors? This is crazy. I just don't understand it.
Sophia,
really,
thank you. And for those who don't know, these numbers have been in the news just this week about how much it's costing to renovate per home at the Rockaways and other places with the Sandy aid. And that certainly sounds like something that would fall in the comptroller's auditing bailiwick. Are you familiar with what's going on?
Yes, and when I became controller, the first audit I commenced was an audit on the Build It Back program, and then we held hearings in the Rockaways and Coney Island, Staten Island. I went and listened to people talk about what was going on there. It was pretty incredible. I'm very disappointed the city is not going to meet its Sandy housing goals. This is just a scandal, and people have suffered. And all I can say this morning is I'm continuing to work with people in all of the communities to make sure that they are whole. And there is a real crisis out there, and we can't forget what's happening out in the Rockaways and other places where people still don't know, you know, or still can't afford to build back their apartments. And we've lost 10,000 people that used to be on a list that they literally have disappeared, threw up their hands, and gave up on their communities because of the bureaucracy, because of outside consultants. And I've been working on this for many years.
Before you go, let me touch on one other thing from your economic vision speech this morning, because we focus so much on the affordable housing parts, and I know there were these other parts. Mm-hmm. And then I want to ask you one political question.
Sure.
But just give us like 30 seconds to a minute on your earned income tax credit proposal. How would you change the earned income tax credit for low-income workers?
EITC is the most effective anti-poverty tool that we have, and the program gets results. So here's what I want to do. I want to triple the earned income tax credit, and that would allow us, just for 0.25% of the city budget, we could literally lift 15,000 people out of poverty, add millions of dollars into the local economy, and give people a direct resource of money that can help them pay the rent, put more clothes on the backs of their children. And so this is a program that works. 20% of New Yorkers, Brian, live below the poverty line. So the EITC could help people, especially people who live in Mott Haven and Hunts Point, where there's 40% of the people below the poverty line. EITC is something Republicans and Democrats agree on. So let's triple it this year, and I'm going to propose that. I'm going to campaign for that in New York City and Albany.
You mean that's the city tax, city income tax?
It's the city tax
portion.
It's a city contribution to the EITC,
which you would have go up by, it looks like, about $200 to $600 per person more.
Yes. Look, it would cost the city $210 million. But what an infusion of dollars for our local economy and to help people out of poverty. And it's the best way I know to make a real difference. Let's triple it, and let's invest in people.
And the political question is, after this conversation, it even more sounds like you might be considering running for mayor next year in a Democratic primary. Should I assume you're not ruling that out?
Well, today, you know what I did? I was invited to give a vision speech for how I believe the city, the priorities of the city. You know, as controller, you really have an opportunity through your audits and work with city agencies to have a sense of where we are economically. And then when you talk to people at town hall meetings and around the city, I wanted to put forth some ideas. The political plans for 2017, you know, I think we Democrats need a moratorium right now on 17, because 16, Hillary versus Trump, that's what we have to focus on. We need to make sure we elect enough Democratic senators so that the Senate Democratic Conference is no longer in doubt. Look what's happened to Republican rule in Albany, weakening our rent laws. And we've got to make sure we have a big Democratic majority. So my 2017 outlook is really informed by my focus right now on 2016, Hillary Clinton and a Democratic state Senate.
Moratorium, but not ruling it out. Scott Stringer, the New York City Comptroller, thank you very much.